In this past year, there's been a lot of focus on text messages and emails either disappearing or being deleted by the former chair of PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, Marissa Gillette. But what's interesting about that is in some ways, state lawmakers are calling for accountability and transparency, right? And we love that. Yay. Yet a recent report revealed that state law does not prohibit legislative branch agencies from deleting email messages, and that includes state legislators. Huh. I find that fascinating. So to talk more about this, we welcome to the show Russell Blair, who is the Director of Communication and Education for the Freedom of Information Commission. Russell, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Don't you find that a little suspect? Just a tad.
Yeah, you know, I'll say we get a lot of issues of records retention at the Freedom of Information Commission. And one thing I should say is that, you know, there's different laws besides FOI that govern retention of records. But the thing to me that was interesting about this issue is that, you know, this report showed the records retention statutes don't apply to the General Assembly, but they do apply to local leaders, you know, so mayors and first selectmen, you know, they're required by statute to retain communications, emails, text messages, but the same rules don't apply to our legislator, which I think is kind of curious. And it's something that has come up before the Freedom of Information Commission before. We had a case a couple years ago. You know, this is not the current issue with PURA, but we had a case where somebody was looking for some communications from some legislators, and those legislators, you know, had left office by the time the agency, you know, got down to getting the records out. And it turned out they couldn't provide certain records because when the lawmakers left office, everything had just been sort of turned off and deleted.
I think that's wrong. Just straight up, I think that's wrong, because my understanding, and again, I don't know. I don't write the laws of Connecticut, obviously, but I would imagine, does it have anything to do with the fact that our legislators are part-time workers? They're not technically in session, if you will, all year round, or those aren't their full-time jobs? Is that why they don't have to keep those records?
So, you know, it's a good question as to why. I mean, you know, one of the things I'll say is the legislature writes the laws, so they can sometimes decide how they want to operate. But I would push back a little bit on the you know, part-time legislature, you know, that they have other jobs aspect of it, because, again, I would go to our local officials, and a lot of people who serve on local boards and commissions are part-time. They don't have devices that the towns are buying for them, but they're still held accountable, and they're supposed to retain these messages. I'll say people don't always retain things according to the law. You know, there are people who maybe are unfamiliar with this, and it's not always a nefarious thing. But, you know, the local officials are covered and they're required to do this. And, you know, I think there's an argument that if we're asking the local people to do it, you know, we should be asking everyone to do it. You know, I work for a state agency in the executive branch. We have records retention laws about what we have to keep in our cases and how long we have to hold on to things. So, you know, I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, if there's challenges, maybe those could be addressed. But, you know, other elected officials at the local level are required to do this, too.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm totally being facetious, Russell, because I agree. I think, first of all, I don't care if you are at a volunteer basis, if you are part time. To me, do you make an impact? That to me is the golden question. So if you're a lawmaker and you are passing laws in our state impacting the average lives who call Connecticut home, I don't know how you can be excused from this. I 1,000% agree with you. I could care less if you put an hour of work into this or if you put 365, 8 hours a day, whatever. To me, I'm shocked that our legislators are not required to have those same standards.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I'll mention, too, you know, for your listeners, I think is important is, you know, if they retain these messages and there's an FOI request, there are certain things that they wouldn't have to provide. You know, if they're getting legal advice, for example, you know, they're not going to have to give up attorney-client privileged communications. There's even a declaratory ruling from the FOI commission about certain correspondence from constituents. So if a constituent texted them with a very personal matter, you know, those are things that might be able to be withheld. But I would agree with you. I mean, this is, you know, the things involved in lawmaking and discussions about legislation. Those are now, it's 2025. Those are happening on email and text message. And, you know, if the public isn't able to learn some of those insights, I think we all sort of lose a little bit that there's less transparency in the process.
Well, and the other thing, too, that was mentioned in this article that we were referencing when we first heard about this report, by the way, we're talking to Russell Blair, who's the Director of Education and Communications for the Freedom of Information Commission. When I was reading through this, another thing that was mentioned was the lack of having, you know, phones or emails, for example, that are tied to your job versus personal cell phones or emails. To me, that also is kind of a cop out. A little bit. I mean, I don't know. To me, I look at, doesn't everybody have a CGA email or something that is more for public record? I mean, to me, we don't live in a time where you only work off of your private accounts. And if you are, that's sort of a choice you're making. I don't know.
Yeah. From the FOI perspective, you know, what makes something a public record is the content of the record. It's not the device it exists on. So, I think in some instances, maybe, officials wrongly believe if they use a personal device or a personal email, that stuff is not discoverable under FOIA, but it can be if it pertains to the public's business. And again, you know, I always think of local boards and commissions because I do a lot of trainings with local officials. And, you know, most mayors and first selectmen, you know, maybe in some larger towns, they get a phone issued by the town, but a lot of them are just using their own devices. And I think they understand if I'm conducting government business on my personal device, then I need to retain those messages and that those could be, made available under FOI. If they think that they need more technology or there needs to be, you know, there's things to address. I mean, you know, again, that's something the legislature could tackle, but I think it's an interesting, dynamic that we do this at the local level and, you know, it doesn't seem to be causing a major issue. Obviously the law would have to change for this to expand to the legislature. But, again, there's very many local officials who understand this and, understand that they might get requests and what they have to retain. And so I think, you know, through education and maybe there's more resources that are needed, but if this, you know, if the people of the state think it's a worthy endeavor, then, there could be resources maybe if this is something that people want to see.
And, you know, and again, we've got Russell Blair here. We're talking about how legislators don't have to follow this same sort of requirement. And you were saying even compared to municipal leaders, which I find really fascinating. I'm surprised that this hasn't come up before. Can I ask you, Russell, it feels like, and maybe I'm just seeing it pop up a lot, but it feels like FOI requests are happening constantly in the last year or so. More than I've ever seen before. Like I always felt like, you know, working in, and I've worked in news for 15 years. So FOI requests was really more of something I felt like, you know, reporters would do if there was this awful crime that had happened and we need to look at, you know, just something that would kind of extend our news coverage of that crime that's beyond what police could tell us. Now I feel like everyone is being FOI'd constantly. I don't know if I'm just hearing it more, but are you finding that there's been an increase in FOI requests in the state of Connecticut in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be on to something. You know, I can't speak for all the requests that every agency receives,
sure.
But, you know, I can talk about the commission and the complaints we get. And this year, we've already broken our record of complaints that we received. I think we're close to like 1,100 complaints this year. Normally, you know, we're more in the 700 to 800 range. So, I think we are seeing more requests. And the one thing I think is kind of interesting, you know, we haven't really had time to kind of get under the hood and figure out what's causing it all, but it seems to be all different issues. You know, it doesn't seem like there's one major thing that is causing these complaints, but, you know, certainly some of the things in the news, you know, we have some cases about communication surrounding the big housing bill people might be familiar with. There was some cases we have dealing with homeschooling. You know, that was an issue that popped up at the end of the legislative session. But a lot of it is just local people that have a local issue. There's some project in their community they're trying to find out more about. Perhaps more people are aware of the law and what it can do, which I think is a good thing, right? I mean, that's part of what I do with the commission is try to make people aware how they can use this in their everyday lives. You don't have to be an attorney. You don't have to be a reporter. You know, if something's going on in your community and you want to learn more about it, you can make an FOI request, and if you don't get the answers that you're looking for, then you can come to the FOI commission. You know, our email is foi@ct.gov. We get all kinds of questions from people, and we try to help them get the information that they're looking for.
Has it always been that way, Russell Blair? Have people always had that opportunity to file an FOI request?
Well, in Connecticut, at least since 1975, the law, we celebrated 50 years of the law in Connecticut this year. It's kind of interesting. I think maybe we take it for granted, but just a short story I'll share. Our commission has been studied by other states and even other countries. It's really seen as kind of a model for open government. And our executive director told me that we had, some visitors, I believe, from China, some professors that came here, and they said that they thought it was out of like a science fiction movie that you could go to your government and ask them for information and they had to give it to you. And then if they didn't, they could be compelled to come to a hearing and have to answer legal questions. It was just like totally something they could never have fathomed. So it's a great thing. And I think, we need more people to be aware of it and not be intimidated by it, which I think sometimes people are. I don't view it as an adversarial thing. I know sometimes elected officials don't always like it, but what I tell them is, isn't that a good thing that you have people in your community who care enough that they're asking about what's going on and they're trying to find out, that they're not just putting their head down and living their life and not engaging? I mean, I think, it can be frustrating sometimes, I imagine, but I think that engagement leads to better discussions and better solutions about all the big problems that we face.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Russell. And look, I think there's a few reasons why it feels like, and again, I mean, I know I'm dating myself a little bit, but I just remember working in network television. And I remember one of the things that was sort of a, whoa, this station's really on top of it, was that you dropped those magic words of, we did an FOI request, and this is what we discovered. Only we discovered this. I mean, that was a real, I felt like, hook in the news world for many, many years. And I think we're still doing that, certainly in some regard. But I think that people are getting more educated. We are so inundated with more and more information, more and more platforms getting information out to you, that people want to know what the truth is. And sometimes it takes, for example, an FOI request to really know the facts of the matter, because you don't trust third-party sources or he said, she said situations. So I think there's a lot of reasons why we're seeing more of that. But I'm glad that you at least validated me, because I have been feeling like, man, in the last year, it's like every other day there's another, well, based on an FOI request, this is what we found out. It just feels like that's happening more and more. And as you mentioned, for just different reasons, it's not always just the same, well, I need to see the language of this or how much money actually was spent on this. It feels like it's constant.
Yeah, it really is constant. And I think that's one, I used to work in journalism, so I understand it from that end of things too. But one of the things I enjoy about my job is it's a lot of different things every day. Every day is something different. One day, you're helping somebody learn about their city budget. The next day, somebody's got questions about zoning codes in their town, and you're trying to help them decipher that. My predecessor who had this job, more than 20 years, he used to joke, like, the spectrum of cases we deal with, it could be something as simple as there's a dispute, between neighbors about, chickens on somebody's property, all the way up to really heavy duty, significant cases like, the Sandy Hook investigation and what could be made public from that. So you never know, what the issues are we're going to face. But, the commission is really dedicated to making sure that the law is upheld and that people are aware, they have this great tool to get information. And, to go back to the point of the retention, just on that point, if people don't retain things, then, there's nothing the commission can do. And that can be frustrating sometimes. We have people who come through our process and months later they realize that the stuff they asked for, was deleted, and sometimes inadvertently, maybe it shouldn't have been deleted, but we can't do anything. We can't order production of records, obviously, if they don't exist. So I think that's why it's so important that people retain things according to the schedules. Again, if the legislature's exempt, they're exempt. But the reason we have records retention is so that if people file FOI requests or if they file lawsuits or whatever, that there are records preserved, so people can investigate these types of things.
Yeah, I think it's important to note. And certainly if it's something that bothers you, feel free to reach out to your local state rep or state senator and say, you know, why are you exempt from this? You know, if you, yeah, if you really believe in that, I'm just saying, if you believe in accountability and reliability and transparency, then I feel like the same should happen to legislators.
Yeah, and I should say some legislators do clearly retain their records because this whole PURA story came about through a
right.
records request to a legislator. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not that everyone isn't doing it, but clearly that report showed they didn't have to. And, you know, we have had cases, you know, before the commission where, you know, that issue was you know, uncovered.
Mm.
And again, we can't do anything if the records don't exist. And if they're allowed to get rid of them, then there's no way for the commission to do anything to assist somebody who might be looking for some information.
Yeah, it just should be uniform. And honestly, I don't see where lawmakers win in credibility if you don't want to stand by that standard and yet you expect others to. I'm just saying, to me, it knocks your credibility, which is not great because, look, I don't think it's easy to be a lawmaker. And I'm not saying that you're not in situations sometimes that can be dicey. But I just think if you're going to use the argument of transparency and credibility and, you know, accountability, then you should be held to the same standard.
Yeah, I think there's a strong argument that, you know, if this is important, then everybody should be participating. You know, and again, I get the technical challenges that might be there, but I think there's a lot of people who do a lot of state agencies who have to do this, municipalities who have to do this. So, you know, I think if it was something where there was a will to do it, I think there would be a way to figure out how to make it work. So it doesn't become cumbersome or burdensome. But I think it's an important element because if you don't have the records available, then FOI doesn't really do you a whole lot of good if you're trying to figure out what happened.
That's a good point. Russell Blair, you were a joy to talk to. I'd love to have you back on the show sometime. And thank you so much for your time today on WICC.
Yeah, of course, anytime. And I'll just another plug. People can email foi@ct.gov if they ever have any questions for us.
Thank you, Russell. Appreciate you. And again, Director of Education and Communications for the Freedom of Information Commission, Russell Blair, we appreciate your time on WICC.